Today we're going to focus on the kitchen of Hilchos Shabbos. Of course, the primary practical question in the Shabbos is heating food. So we know that there is an issur of bishul, not to cook on Shabbos, and therefore we must be careful not to do something which might be considered cooking. What is cooking? Taking raw food and cooking it for the first time, that's real bishul. Once something is cooked already, the general principle is ain bishul acha bishul. Although we paskin lahalocha, that's limited to solid food. When it comes to liquid foods, we paskin the yesh bishul acha bishul. Okay? This puts us in a difficult situation with respect to liquids. In other words, if you have cold soup, there's really no way to heat it up on Shabbos, because it's yesh bishul acha bishul v'davolach. Comes to solid foods, once it was cooked before, there's no problem with bishul proper. Maybe other problems which we'll get to later on. What about something which was never cooked before? So that is clearly an issur of bishul. But bishul, the Gemara tells us, a kli sheni eino bevashel. What's a kli sheni? Kli sheni means a utensil which was never on the fire. It is not, it was never on the fire. That's called a cliché. So according to the Gemara, cliché and imavashal means if you have a cup which you filled from a kettle or an urn, so that's called a cliché. So there's no problem. You can put anything you want into that cliché. That's what the Gemara tells us. And for Achenu HaMeidot HaMizrach, it's true with the sole exception of, paradoxically, bread. Bread, there is a concept of yesh bishul acharafia. I mean, all baked goods. So, ironically, yesh bishul acharafia, which is self-controversial, that's the one place Maran Bet Yosef in Simen Shin Yud Ches, long Simen, one place is worried about a klisheni, is there. Notwithstanding the fact that according to some Rishonim, there's no bishul acharafia at all. See, why pick this spot to be machmer? Never picked it any, not by other foods which are raw. So the answer may be that the most normal way to cook any other food is in a kli rishon. You want to cook a potato, you put it into a pot on the fire. When it comes to baked goods, it's not that common for us to be putting baked goods into a kli rishon on the fire. Rather, as some of us know, the most common manifestation is Dunkin' Donuts. No commercials here. you dunk your donut into a coffee cup. The coffee cup is a klisheni. So therefore, it's very possible that that's the most likely and common way of placing a baked item into a hot liquid is dafka in a klisheni. Since it's the normal way, perhaps that's the reason why the Maran Bet Yosef is strict when it comes to davar afui, as opposed to something which is raw. Even though in general, raw is more strict, because raw is certainly subject to cooking, and so a baked item is only, it's a matter of machlokes. Forgive me if I'm too slow. Just one second. Hi. Missing all my calls. I don't hear it. I don't feel it vibrating. So. Back to vibrate. I apologize. Okay.
Kalei HaBishul.
Oh. There is a concept called Kalei HaBishul. That's true. You have a big machmer sitting to my left. But surprise, the Maran Bet Yosef is not worried about Kalei HaBishul, except for those specific cases found in the Gemara. Ashkenazim, once again, are much more strict, because the Mogan Avram is worried about Kalei HaBishul. We don't know, we're not experts, and whatever's not found in the Gemara explicitly to be permissible, we have to worry, maybe it's Kali HaBishul. What's found in the Gemara permissible? Water is permissible in a klisheni, and spices. That's it. Everything else is not, we assume, Maran Bet Yosef is lenient, but Mogan Avram, Mishnah Berurah, and Ashkenazi Poskim are strict because of Kali HaBishul, number one. Number two, Tosfos says in Shabbos HaLamates, the klisheni ain't a mevashel min haTorah, but midrabbanan it's merzik a mevashel. Looks like cooking. So the whole klisheni deal doesn't help us that much. because of these particular chumras that are found. The Magen Avraham quotes both of them, and Mishnah Berurah does as well. So therefore, we don't really like to rely upon a kli sheni for something which has not been cooked until now. Okay, so let's review briefly. Kli rishon is mevashel min haTorah. Kli sheni is not, with the possible exception of kali habishul. Lemaisa, for at least for Ashkenazim, we're strict that maybe it's a kali habishul, and aside from that, it's nirek mevashel, so we do not allow kli sheni. What about kli shlishi? So kli shlishi is a new term. You don't find the word kli shlishi in Shas. The only place you actually find it is in the Sefer Yireyim, where he equates kli shlishi with kli sheni. It all depends on if it cooks or not. And my Rebbe said it's kli rishon, it's on the fire, and then it's 2 to infinity, which is called kli sheni. I don't call it shlishi, revi, chamishi, it's all irrelevant. As long as it's hot, I mentioned last week the shiur of Yatzah Lettuce Bowl, so it's potentially a problem. Many poskim don't agree with this. This Yireyim was not so well known. The first half of the Yireyim to prohibit bread even a kli sheni is found in the Sefer Mordechai in the back of the Sefer Shabbos. That part didn't make the cut for whatever reason. Doesn't mean disagreed, just didn't put it in there for reasons which you don't fully understand. And therefore it's not a well-known Yireyim, and therefore people never heard of the Yireyim, and they're very lenient with kli shlishi. But even the Mishnah Berurah certainly is a kli shlishi, but my Rebbe wasn't a fan, I guess therefore I'm not a fan of the kli shlishi you had to read. So therefore you have big problems. You want to make tea on Shabbos, you're stuck. The quarter of Moshe is a kli shlishi. He follows also a lenient. But according to those who disagree, so the question then becomes, how do you make tea on Shabbos? Simplest way is you don't make tea on Shabbos. You want to make tea, make it before Shabbos.
Yes.
So instead of making the whole tea before Shabbos and having an urn filled with tea, we are urns filled with water, but some urns are filled with tea. Not in this place. So what do? So you have a content called the essence of tea, also called for short scents. All right, that's what it's called, scents. And this tea, we'll call it tea concentrate. So it was cooked before Shabbos. So now it's cooked before Shabbos. So we have the possibility of suggesting that ein bishul achar bishul. But wait a minute. If the tea essence is cooled down, we said earlier that there's an opinion which says yesh bishul achar bishul b'davalach. You cannot heat hot soup. Can't we heat it on Shabbos? So why should this be any different? So the answer is, you have a combination of potential leniencies. On the one hand, you have those who maintain ein bishlach abishal balach, and then on the other hand, there are those who say that klisheni is not really a problem. Remember, we said earlier, klisheni is not a problem when it comes to water. So it's a machlokas with respect to other liquids. The brewer happens to be strict by other liquids, but when it comes to tea essence, which was already cooked, just cooled down, the combination of leniencies leads the Mishnah Berurah to be lenient in this regard, halacha lemaisa. That's what we do. We put the tea scents or essence into a kli sheni. That is permissible. That's one way to make tea. We have to prepare before Shabbos. Yeah?
Two questions first. Isn't there also a kli sheni, the fact that the final to make the things cool? So
no.
The more you put in different kelim, the more cooler it gets. No?
No.
So why wouldn't there be more than a kli sheni?
Because it's because as long as it's too hot to touch, that's a lettuce bowl, the fact that it's a little bit cooler shouldn't make any difference. You are correct, however, and this I'll say straight up, that if our definition, which mentioned earlier, is depends what's normal, whatever's normal we're strict, what's not normal, we have a right to be lenient, then there could be a distinction between sheni and shlishi on different grounds. Not because shlishi is cooler, but rather it's not normal. But when it comes to tea, it doesn't help us. Because it's extraordinarily normal to make tea in a kli shlishi. How so? You go to a wedding, they take out a very beautiful pitcher, silver pitcher, and they pour water and they give you a tea bag. Who thinks that pitcher ever saw the fire? What, are you kidding? They're going to ruin the silver gleam? No, they cooked it in a kettle, and they pour it from the kettle into the pitcher, and from the pitcher into the cup. It's already kli shlishi. And they give you a tea bag to put it in. How can you say it's not normal? So in principle, that would be a distinction, but in reality, with respect to tea, I don't think it works. Bottom line. So therefore, to make tea on Shabbos, you have to use what we call tea essence or scents. Tea bags are a very big problem. Because tea bags are not cooked before. And although Rav Moshe is lenient in the Kli Shlishi, as I mentioned before, I'm not a fan because of the reasons I told you earlier. The Urim Asa is Kli Shlishi, the same as Kli Sheni, and the Tibig presumably is not pre-cooked. It's a problem. Now, there are those who maintain, what's the problem? A Tibig is Tavlin. It's a spice. It's a spice. And spice is mutter in Kli Sheni. We said that's explicitly in the Mishnah. Kli Sheni is mutter, Tavlin is Kli Sheni. Well, not everyone agrees to that psak. Why not? It's a good question, why not? Some say that the heter of Tavlin only applied in the olden days, when they had roots, you know, these big cinnamon roots or other roots, big, fat items. So that could not be cooked in the Kli Sheni. Today we have granulated spices, such as tea, a little powder. It's granulated. To the contrary, it's going to be eat more easily cooked than a Kli Sheni, because it's water everywhere. There's these little granules dissolve, and then they become cooked rather quickly. And therefore, there's some who maintain that the tea that we have today is not, it's very thin, and therefore it's a potential problem. Same would apply to coffee. In other words, coffee which is previously uncooked coffee, as opposed to instant. You know, the regular coffee, which is, even though it's maybe thin, nonetheless, even though maybe considered a spice, but since it's so thin, usually it's very, very, very thin. Maybe we should be machmer on that basis. Now, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman was machmer in this, and there were those who critiqued him and said, "How can he say such a thing? What do you mean? There's no source for it in the Gemara. It says the Tavlin is mutter. They don't cut the Tavlin in those days as well. What are you talking about?" They were attacking Rabbi Shlomo Zalman for being too strict, which is a little unusual. However, in the Gemara, there are two opinions about salt. One says salt is more lenient, you can put it even to a clearish off the fire. One says salt is more strict, also in a clisheni. Perhaps Rav Shlomo Zalman understood that salt is just a paradigm, it's just as one example of any pulverized spice. So when they asked against Rav Shlomo Zalman, what do you have in Shas that a pulverized spice is granulated? Should be strict. I have it in Shas. It's melach. And it's a similar idea. So therefore, we have to be strict for this svara. There's another svara as well, but let's leave it at that. So bottom line is, it's a problem. Now, this thing called instant tea. You have your instant tea? If you buy it in the store, what does it say on the outside?
Tea? Instant?
Has anyone ever seen instant tea in his life?
No. Instant coffee.
Instant coffee, for sure. Instant coffee is permissible.
Iced tea?
Oh, correct. It's called iced tea. Very good. Excellent. There's a big difference. Big difference. The difference is that there are those who maintain that the heter of ein bishul acha bishul bedavar yavesh, something which is solid, should only apply if it does not need additional warmth to make it edible. For example, cold chicken. We eat cold chicken every Shabbos. It was cold chicken. Delicious! Delicious! Well, it's scrumptious cold chicken. You want to heat it up? No. You're not taking something which is inedible and making it edible. That's why we say, ain't bish hagabish with davar yavish. Cold kugel? Delectable. Right? So therefore, the same leniency would apply. Cold chicken soup? Yeah. So therefore, even Yagila wouldn't eat this. So therefore, so Yoruch HaShulchan says on that basis, a big problem with this coffee and tea. People said you can put coffee and tea, which is pre-cooked, into a cup of boiling water. Now, what do you mean? How can you do that? Everyone knows that you cannot use these items unless they're put into a very hot water. So therefore, it's who are we kidding, right? We all know that even though it was technically speaking, it was cooked already, but it wasn't really usable without having been inserted into hot water should be prohibited. And I was bothered by this question, and I realized, oh, instant tea is really called iced tea. And iced tea, you can take it and put it, mix it in with ice water, and it works. And the reason it works, of course, is because the tea was pre-cooked, an instant tea. And now you can, in fact, it does not need to be inserted necessarily into a hot item. You can put it, it's called iced tea. And that's what instant tea is called, iced tea. Instant coffee, on the other hand, is called instant coffee. It's not called iced coffee. But guess what? I'm told people have iced coffee. True? Good. So it's the same leniency would apply. So therefore, it's permissible to use instant tea, or a.k.a. iced tea, or instant coffee, a.k.a. instant coffee, and put into a cliché on Shabbos.
So are we saying it's edible either way, even if it's cold?
Now, even if you put it into cold, it could work. Yes?
You can't dissolve the iced coffee until you make it hot. The instant coffee, if you put cold water, it won't really dissolve.
I'm told that if you leave it there for a period of time, it works. MS or Sheker? No. If you take the instant coffee, you want to make iced coffee. So the people, the professionals, make iced coffee. Oh, they make a regular coffee, boiling hot, and then it somehow cools down, and then they make iced coffee. But I'm told that the amateurs are able to make iced coffee directly from the instant coffee without ever it going into emes.
From cold water?
Yeah, cold water.
Just mix with the coffee.
Yeah. Emes. Oh, the yeshivish guys know all about it. I recommend you get off coffee. It's an addictive. We went through this before in a different forum. So, but for those who are addicted already, so then it would be permissible. Never to that. Addicts. Yeah.
All this that we said about Bishul only applies if it's that's what it's called.
Like correct. Your... Correct. Yeah.
If the instant coffee is roasted, is it relevant? Bishul
Acharav Yachar. Ooh. Excellent question. Some of the coffees, instant coffees, that they cook it and then they roast it subsequently. There's a big dispute about, we said before, if you take something and you change its state, it was baked, now it's cooked, it's prohibited. We assume as well, if it was roasted and then cooked, it's also prohibited, because roasting is without water and cooking is with water, it's a different process. In this particular case, it's unusual. It was cooked and then roasted. And now you're cooking it again. There's a long bialach about that. What do you do with that situation? To my mind, it's not really roasted. It's fundamentally cooked. And when you're cooking it, you're not trying to change the taste. You're not really trying to cook it at all. You're just trying to have hot coffee. So now it would be lenient in that kind of situation. But if you want to be machmir, and I drink coffee 7 days a week, that's my bracha. Yeah. Yeah.
Why about instant coffee? Didn't Rabbi say that it would be passing in Bishul Achar Bishul B'davar Yovish?
Correct.
So why would it be a problem for the instant coffee?
I told you. The Aruch HaShulchan says that Ein Bishul Achar Bishul B'davar Yovish is not a Gzeres HaKosuf, Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai. It's logic. Right. You can have the chicken cold, you can have the kugel cold, but you can't have the coffee cold. Right. But you can. So that's why it's okay. Yeah.
Are there still problems of heating up water to temperatures less than Yad Toledo spot?
Technically speaking, no. The Chayotim says, you put water near a fire, and you have every intention of removing it before you ask the lettuce boat, it's prohibited, because you may forget. It's been known to happen. Right. Fine. Okay. Yes?
There's a minute amount of liquid with the chicken.
Very good question. Excellent. Yeah. Everything has liquid, right? Everything in the world has liquid. Without liquid, nothing can exist. So whatever liquid is absorbed within the salad is not a problem. Whatever's on top, you should try to shake it off, and whatever's left over is okay. Okay. Now, Rabosai, having said all this, we see that it's theoretically possible for a Shomer Shabbos Jew to violate an Issur Bishul D'oraisa in his kitchen on Shabbos without even realizing it. He's not going to start cooking a chicken from scratch. That he would never do. We give a couple of examples just now, which can border on, or even pass the border on, of Bishul D'oraisa. You have to be careful with absolute cooking on Shabbos. We should be very, very careful about these things. You know, there are some leniencies. Some people say, Klishlishi, I told you, and some have other leniencies, but I'm not a fan of these leniencies, and we should try to be strict whenever possible for something which has not been cooked before Shabbos. Yes, now, you have salads cooked before Shabbos, no problem. Okay, good. So I have chicken, I put it in the refrigerator overnight, shouldn't spoil. Now I want to heat it up on Shabbos. Now what do I do? There's no bishul problem. So, if as far as the din Torah is concerned, there's no problem. Any fire you happen to have, any hot surface, you put the chicken on it. I mean, that Torah is no prohibition whatsoever. Okay. However, there are serious issues with respect to open fires on Shabbos. An open fire on Shabbos, in certain cases, you're not allowed to put something there before Shabbos. That's called Shehiyah. Even before Shabbos. Why? Because you're afraid you're going to stoke the coals on Shabbos. Today we'd call that to adjust the fire on Shabbos. So therefore, if you were in your Gila, it was actually they're stoking coals on Shabbos. They're Shabbos out. They had actual coals. So the old-fashioned Shemichata Begacholim, as the Gemara calls it, was actually real in some distant forest site. Okay? Fine. So therefore, if you want to put something on an open fire before Shabbos, you have to make sure, if you're Ashkenazi, that it's at least half-cooked, Machal Ben Drusoi, maybe even a third, according to Rashi. If you're a Me'achenu, Me'idot HaMizrach, you have to make sure that it's not only is it fully cooked, but it's reached the point of Mitztamek V'ralo. It's almost overcooked. According to Maran Bet Yosef, that's in order to put on an uncovered fire. To put on a covered fire, according to Ramo, Pashup Shah should be het the gummim. If you want to put something on Friday before Shabbos on a covered fire, it should be absolutely no problem. There is some more machmir for a variety of reasons. Rabbi Kivega is worried that you may stir it, and there are those who say the last few minutes before Shabbos, you couldn't heat it up if you want, before Shabbos begins, it's considered to put it on Shabbos, which we'll get to in a second. So there are certain machmirim, but Mikir Adin, as long as it's before Shabbos, and it's a covered fire, everything goes. Anything goes. Okay.
Yeah, but
not up to date. Now, now the question becomes, Rabbi Osai, putting food on a hot surface on Shabbos. Oh, that's called either chazara or hachzara. If you have it in your hand, don't let go. You put it on and put it right back again. That's when I grew up. That's how we did with tea. The old-fashioned water kettle go, woo. Before Shabbos. My father, Zichrono Levracha, would never allow it to be used until he heard the whistling before Shabbos. I always said before, have a blech, it's not necessary. Yeah, Zerubi Kivege was so strict about it. So he would make sure that it would whistle before Shabbos, he'd put it on the blech, and you can move it around the blech a little bit, and then you could use it to have a source for hot water for your coffee or tea on Shabbos. That was done in my house all the years. Now you have these urns. See the urn over there? 100 cup urn. See that urn? See it? See it? Yeah. I mean, people use it on Shabbos? Did you, I'm asking, use it?
Yeah.
Use it during the week?
Yes.
So I'm very happy because that urn belongs to me. You got it, I think, as a gift or something. Maybe, we had 100 cups in my house. It's ridiculous. You know, so it was sort of a long-term loan to Maror Shakola. I'm very happy that people are using it. So that's how people make coffee and tea nowadays. They set up the urn before Shabbos and the water boils before Shabbos. And no problem. No problem. I'm trying to see over here. Oh. There's a slight problem. That tube.
Yeah.
You have a tube there? Some posts can want to say
measure?
That the tube, which tells you how many cups are left, is outside the insulation. Could be the water in the tube is not really as hot as the water inside the urn itself. So then when you take water out, a little bit of the water in the tube goes into the main body of the urn. It's a potential problem. There I make helium. They say it's a psikresha. He doesn't really want it. Some say it's even called lo nichale, which is arguable. And some say that all the water is the same temperature based on science, physics. Those who want to be more strict, we used to do it here in camp before Shabbos. I don't touch these urns. But the way that some people have advocated, I think according to Rabbi Heinemann, is before Shabbos, when it's all ready to go, take it and tip it a little bit. If you tip it, not too much. If you tip it, if you're strong enough, if you tip it, then the water from the tube will go into the urn proper. Then all the water will be intermingled, 100% sure. Others say, you know, you don't have to tip it. You should just leave it that way. Within a short period of time, all the water intermingles. By the time the first cup of tea is taken out after, after the meal, you know, remember, this is set up before before Shabbos, and you have Kabbalah Shabbos, and you have Dvar Torah, and you have Ma'ariv, and you have Kiddush, and then you have first few courses, not until after the main dish we used to go to have tea. But that time all the words were intermingled. Again, you have to ask a scientist to find out what the real truth is. Yes?
In general, when we define like lo michale, does that mean that, is that like a Matthias question, or is it a question like even a person would be over halacha?
No, what did you want during the week?
Right.
So I think that Rav Moshe says, come on, small amount is irrelevant. It's lo michale. For that reason, Rav Moshe wants to suggest, if you have a cup of tea, you want to pour a second cup of tea, but there's a little bit of water on the bottom, and that water is cooled off completely. So the Rav Moshe suggests it's called a psik reisha de lo nichale. You're not interested in warming up those little droplets on the bottom. Just want another cup of tea. Too lazy to dry it out, or get a new cup. It's a psik reisha de lo nichale. Not so simple to me. But just imagine, for those tea drinkers, yeah, I'm not one of them, but I like hot soup on Shabbos, so I can give the analogy. First, it's delicious hot chicken soup, piping hot. Well, hot tea, it's going to be all of a sudden in the middle, there's this little stream of cold water. Ooh. It's a put-off. You want it to be all hot. You don't want a little bit of cold mixed in. So therefore, I want to consider it to be a psikration of the nichole. Because if the little amount of water that was on the bottom, or tea, was not heated up by the huge amount that's going in, you'd have some cold stuff in the middle of the hot stuff. You know, which would not be so appealing. Okay, that's what I thought. Others say it's a little nichole. In any event, let's go back to where we are. So there is a potential problem of putting something on a surface on Shabbos. Either hachzara, means if you had it in your hand, you never let go. That's or you put it on the counter and held on. That's considered to be hachzara, which is permissible on a covered surface. I have to tell you that in this kitchen, for many years, there was sort of raid the shul on Friday night. There's one big shul pot. Raid the shul on Friday night. And they had a big strong guy, maybe two, picked this big pot. Now I think there were a few pots, no? Correct? There were a few shul pots on Friday night?
Yeah.
It used to be one huge pot. One. They'd pick it up, it was great effort, put it down and dish it out in the raid. But then one person was charged with the obligation, almost Yehorg Vayavar, not to let go of that handle. You let go of the hand, you can't put it back, and they shecht him on Shabbos. So they had to hold on. So we assume if you hold on to it, that's considered to be good enough, even if it's not in the air, it's on the on the counter or table, as long as you have never let go. That's considered to be hachzara. And hachzara, there are five conditions that have to be met to put it back on one of them has to be a fully cooked food. Right? So obviously it has to be a fully cooked solid food. It has to be a covered fire. Okay? It has to be... Let's start again. It has to be fully cooked. It has to be a covered fire.
No handles?
No. Then you have to, when you take it off, you had to have in mind to put it back.
Right.
And you also may not let go. Those two conditions are required, the chatchila. Maybe five means it's solid as opposed to liquid. Yes, sir? Oh, if it's a liquid, such as the kettle, very good. So if it's a liquid, oh. Lo nistan legamer, that's the answer. The fifth is it should not be completely cooled down. Why should it not be completely cooled down? So the dispute itself. Some say that's limited to liquid, that condition, such as the tea. But let's say if it would be a solid, even if it's cooled down, big deal. And others say no. Once it's cooled down, what's the whole lump despite all these conditions? It has to be cooked. Otherwise, it's bishul. It has to be covered. Otherwise, there are problems. You may adjust it. It looks like cooking. But the other three, it has to be called hachzara, which is a return, as opposed to a case in which the initial state was canceled, nisbatel. And now you're putting it on from scratch. That is not allowed to put it on from scratch. So, if you have it in your hand, and you put it down, you know, on a count, and you never let go, and you had a mind to put it back, and it hasn't been cooled down completely, then it's considered to be returned. the absence of any of those conditions is considered to be starting from scratch. It's called hanacha, and hanacha is prohibited even though the fire is covered. So that's the rules, all right? So therefore, yes?
In terms of what's considered fully cooked, how does Rabbi Paskin about like bones being...
Depends on who's eating the bones. If it's, everyone eats it, it's a problem. Otherwise, no one eats it, it's not a problem.
So it's you personally?
But... You personally, maybe, or maybe the majority of people. It's a good question. I'm not sure. Yes?
In what cases is she here, Mutter?
She is before Shabbos.
Yeah, before Shabbos.
Which case? Either a covered fire or an uncovered fire if it's, let's say, half-cooked for Ashkenazi. All right. So now, let's just review again. So we have this big problem. You want to take chicken. You have it Friday night. You put it in the fridge. You want to heat it up on Shabbos. You're stuck. Why? Because it's lacking those conditions. Right? It's fully cooled. And obviously, you put it down. Obviously. So there's a big problem. What do you do? The blech won't help. It's a problem. So, there are a number of solutions. In my view, the best solution is go buy yourself a, what we call a hot plate. Some call it a warming, what they call it? A warming tray. So one of those things, you buy it, and that's, if you buy a non-adjustable kind, so there's no problem, what we call Shema Yechata Begachom, which is one of the reasons given for Dizzy Surim, you may adjust. There's nothing to adjust. However, there's an additional svar called Nirika Mevashel. That's what you may not put in the back. Nirika Mevashel. However, there's a however to the however. These warming trays, or aka hot plates, are as a rule never used for cooking. Now we have a lot of people in the room. Have you ever used these things for cooking? Now, the typical American verb brand of this, you can't even use for cooking because it's barely out, so let us know. Some of those Israeli ones are very, very, very hot. They could be used for cooking, but in America, I never saw anyone use it for cooking. So if in my view, it's also permissible, although one wanted to be strict, I could hear it. Okay? That's the simplest way. You've obviated the entire problem. But with these devices, there's no Nirikim Evashel, there's no Shem Yechad. It remains Mutter. That's the best way, the easiest way to do it. My preference, again, to the American version, as I call it, doesn't get all that hot. But if someone wants to use the quote Israeli version, I think it's also permissible because no one cooks out in this country. Yeah?
If one person dish with a lot of liquid on a hot plate on Shabbos, is there any way that the food could still be Mutter?
You put liquid on it? You're not allowed to put liquid on a hot plate.
No, I'm saying after.
After the fact. Tell them not to do it again.
You're sitting in a guest house.
I guess you're a guest in someone's house. Ay, ay, ay. So, look. Give me the precise case in your exact words.
Fish with liquid.
Okay, so if... That's what you're saying, fish with liquid. A small, tiny amount of liquid that's absorbed in the fish, more or less, that's okay. There's a significant amount of liquid, which I understand to be your question. It's a big problem. It's a big problem because the liquid, as we say, bishlach habishlach b'davolach. If you're a guest in someone's house and he does this, in my view, you can eat the fish. Just leave over the liquid. The fish itself is solid. Okay? That's what I recommend. Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Can somebody heat up something next to, like, liquids? Could they put, like, a sauce next to the hot plate if it gets a little warm?
Now, a little warm, we said before, not the yatsa lettuce, but it's okay as long as, A, it'll never get yatsa lettuce no matter how long you leave it there, and B, it's not directly on top of a fire. So if it's near a hot plate, it should be okay. Yeah.
What do we mean by a covered fire?
Blech. Yeah.
Is the Baba Ha'is Mutter in his case? Can he also eat the fish?
I mean, after the fact?
Yeah.
Good question. Good question. I think the answer is yes, because the fish itself is permitted. There's no prohibition about the fish itself. Okay? Good. Yeah, sorry.
Should the blech cover the knobs?
Now, technically speaking, the blech need not cover the knobs, because in the time of the Gemara, all you required was what we call ketumah. As they had in the Agilu, they covered the fire with with earth, with things which are, you know, blocks some of the heat. Of course, in those days, that's where you would stoke the coal, so it served that function as well. But Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva that we follow the law as it's written, namely, cover the fire. Even though it might be more logical to cover the handles, but we don't make our own laws. We follow the traditional laws. And therefore, it has to be, the fire must be covered, and the knobs need not be covered. You want to cover them too with these crooked blech like this? That's, I guess that's better. But it's not an absolute requirement. All right? So we found out a way how to heat dry food on Shabbos, Baruch Hashem. That's to buy one of these hot plates. My time is up, because I also want to go to Musar. So it'll be better next week. We'll have another shiur. Shabbat Shalom.